Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Good morning to you, and welcome to another edition of Better Living, a show about the people and organizations that make an impact around Dallas-Fort Worth. I'm Jim Zippo of 98.7 KLOVE. Thanks for joining me. This week, we're going to focus on two important DFW nonprofits. In a few minutes, we'll be talking with Paige Flink, the CEO of The Family Place. Paige and the rest of The Family Place folks have been working hard to stop family violence in DFW since back in 1978. And as you might have guessed, during the COVID-19 pandemic, their efforts have been a bit stifled. However, there are ways you can help. And she'll tell us exactly how you can do that. Right now, join us to start this hour, Dave Swavey, the founder and executive director of the Guns and Hoses Foundation of North Texas. What do they do? Well, they help out families of the fallen heroes, brave folks who have had to make the ultimate sacrifice to keep us safe. Dave and the rest of the Guns and Hoses folks help the surviving families. And they have some terrific programs, too. Of course, they've been affected by the COVID pandemic as well, but they're doing a little workaround. Very creative, and you can help them too. Hi, Dave.
Hey, Jim. How you doing? Thanks very much for calling me on here today.
My pleasure. Glad to help. Tell me about Guns and Hoses and what you guys are doing.
We've been actively involved and just trying to stay involved in the community. Obviously, we're all taken back by the pandemic and all of the things that are going on in the country, and we've been kind of monitoring that. Unfortunately, we've had to cancel most of our events. Because of the pandemic, golf and boxing and things that would require people to have close contact. So we've been kind of active in other regards, looking at the frontline warriors, as everybody is now coining it, the nurses and the doctors. We reached out to our sponsors and asked them if they would be interested in participating in a little bit of gift giving. So through all of our sponsors, we were able to acquire about 7 or 8 items, got a nice little backpack. And through the efforts of them and Guns and Hoses, we've been delivering those to the local hospitals, 100 bags each, just letting these doctors and nurses, you know that we're thinking about them. And we put a little letter in there from the sponsors that say thank you. And just been kind of trying to do things, you know, like that, just staying involved. We've been helping out the local food pantries, Good Samaritans over here in Garland, and just kind of looking to see what's available to try to, you know, to just try to help in this time.
Dave, you've been doing this a long time, something like 28 years, right?
Actually, the boxing program that we started back in the 90s, yes, sir, that's been 28 years in the making, and part of the funding that we acquire through Guns and Hoses is to try to help some of these children's charities and that are related to the police and fire department. So the boxing gym over in Garland is definitely one of those. We support Irving Powell, Dallas Powell, Fort Worth, and Grand Prairie that have boxing gyms as well. And we try to help the fire department by taking kids out Christmas shopping once a year. And we do that through the Garland Fire Department. So yeah, I've been doing that 28 years, worked for the police department in Garland for 35, retired in 2015, and just took over the Guns and Hoses Foundation. My wife and I said we had to quit our paid gigs so we could go work the free one.
The free one, actually the best one, because it's all from the heart.
Yeah, we were able to put a nice career together, and we were in place, you know, empty nesters, so to speak, so we were able to find the time. And it just, you know, my wife is the one who, believe it or not, puts all the fights together for the boxing event in September. So her summers are pretty much spent just trying to keep up with the paperwork. Keeping, you know, cops and firemen are required such a large amount of paperwork on a daily basis through their job. But when it comes to personal stuff, it's like herding cats.
Herding cats.
Yeah, their paperwork is it's quite entertaining sometimes what we end up having to do to chase them down. But, you know, behind the scenes, we're praying for a lot of these first responders out here that are working. I know a lot of guys on a personal level, men and women that have, you know, come down with the COVID, been able to recover from them mostly. I believe we've lost a couple in the Houston area. I know we've got one guy that's from the Rockwall Police Department we're still keeping an eye on that's been in intensive care, I believe.
Wow.
And they're doing some fundraisers for him. But when the gym started opening back up, so we went full gear back into the police boxing gyms. We were able to get a good majority of our kids back. I think we're probably at about 50% of what we once had. You know, there's always a blessing when there's a curse, right? Or they say, what is it? With every curse comes a blessing, and with every blessing comes a curse, I think.
That's right.
So during this time, I had a long-term friend that was part of the school district and actually used to own a restaurant. Well, he knew that I was trying to get the kids fed some kind of an after-school snack program. And we tried for about 5 years to work within the system in the school district. Well, he came across a husband and a wife out of Dallas, and the name of their project is called Fulfillment Project, and they feed children of programs such as mine. I met with the couple. We got interviewed. They looked at what our options and opportunities were, and about a week later, they said, we've agreed to fund your program. So once a week for the summer, they bring a van full of food that is equivalent to about 4 days worth of breakfast and lunch. And we divide those up, put them in bags, and then hand them out to the children when they come into the boxing gym. So that's been a blessing. And then a lady who was able to, based on her job, was able to retire early and started a program called Zane Zang, not Zing Zang, like the Bloody Mary mix.
Zane Zang.
Yeah, Zane Zang, and it's a nonprofit. She started by going down to Dallas and talking to a gentleman who she found out was 70 years old, homeless, and a military veteran.
Oh.
She started communicating with them, feeding people, and through efforts of other friends and sponsors, she found out about our program, and now she's been coming every 10 days with a load of something, from cleaning supplies to food. So those two blessings have landed right there in the middle of guns and hoses during this pandemic. So it's been really nice to have stuff that I can share with not only our kids, but other programs.
Tell me about the boxing gym, how it started, and then it had to shut down. Then you got new funding, and it's restored, and it's back again, right?
We acquired a brand new chief for the city of Garland back in 1991, and we were experiencing a gang problem in the city of Garland, unlike anything we had ever seen before. This chief came with a lot of progressive ideas, and because of his commitment to expanding the department, we started a gang unit, and I had just newly been promoted to lieutenant. So, for whatever reason, ended up becoming the first supervisor over the gang unit. That started in 1993, at the same time that we started the school's resource officer program, which became very popular in the 90s as well. And from 93 to 95, I was in the heat of the battle with a lot of these community groups in the city of Garland. You're calling my kid a gangster. That's not fair. What do we do? You know, you can't do that, so on and so forth, to the point where now there was some buy-in with the parents, to the point where they realized, hey, we do have problems in our youth. What can we do to get them out of here? And myself and another officer, Steve Martin, who both had a boxing experience as kids, looked around the city, couldn't find anything to speak of. So we made the decision to try boxing, which is what we grew up on, not realizing how big this thing was going to grow. So we started the program with about 6 to 8 kids in 1995, And last year, before the pandemic, we were considered the fourth largest boxing gym in the country. So it's kind of grown to the point where I could no longer fund it through my own credit card and small fundraisers and sorts. So we came up with the idea through, again, some sponsors and friends, the idea of utilizing the Guns and Hoses event, which started actually in Houston some 36 years ago. And then they coined the phrase, and then it went to St. Louis, and St. Louis actually created a trademark for it. So in order to have the name, you have to call St. Louis and get the approval, which is under their mission. A majority of the money has to go to police and fire, fallen, killed in the line of duty, which we do. But I also asked, is there a possibility that we can use money additionally to support the program that is actually allowing you the boxing? So they agreed to that, and that's what I began utilizing to help fund the program. So that kind of grew about 20 years ago now is when we started the Guns and Hoses in North Texas.
And from there, it's grown a lot.
In different states across the country.
That's pretty impressive. And you got a membership, over 20,000 peace officers, firefighters, and a lot more.
Yeah, we stay quite busy at trying to stay ahead of the game. And unfortunately, and my wife and I saw this early on, you know, when you hear of an officer or firefighter that's passed in the line of duty, you know, the story goes, it's a 72-hour, and I take to coin the phrase, but it kind of becomes a circus for the family because they're being pulled and tugged every which way, and there's a lot of, it's a very, you know, formal organization that takes care of these families very well. But in doing so, you think about this, and 72 hours after the funeral's over with, it just becomes a story. So you don't really think about all of the ones the past, and the numbers are now to where we have had 60 fatalities since we started in 2003.
Wow.
Which is way too many. And, you know, we're all familiar with when we lost 5 in Dallas in July. We all know that, but it's too big of a number for an area this size. And I know Texas has pretty much led the states in officer deaths, officer fatalities. I think California used to be, and, you know, then Florida. But I think Texas has kind of been that one. So we say this often, that it's the saddest thing you'll ever feel good about, you know, being able to take a check to a family for their immediate needs, to just know that we can put money in their hands when that need arises, if it does. And what I also know about what happens with the paperwork, you know, they have to get back after the funeral is over with, and they have to fill the paperwork out. And that could take, for the first check to arrive, whether it's the state, local, or federal assistance, it could take 24 to 36 months before they ever see anything. So we know on several occasions that our money has really, you know, helped them pay the next month's rent or the house payment or keep the kids in school. So we're able to do that through all the sporting events that we do. Unfortunately, we have not been able to do any of those this year, so we're just praying really hard that none of that occurs until we're able to, you know, reconvene.
Now, if somebody is listening to the show and they want to help you guys out and donate some money, how do they do that? Who do they get in touch with?
I can give you my cell phone. It's always available. But you can go to Guns and Hoses Foundation of North Texas .org. So it's Guns and Hoses Foundation, NorthTX.org. Mm-hmm. And there's a donate page right there where you can donate, and they can reach out to us. Mm-hmm. A lot of people, you know, want to know how much money of their donation actually goes to the family. And I really don't know how to make a percentage over 100%, but I tell people we have never raised more money than we've given.
Yeah.
For an individual fatality. So I feel pretty good. I know the Dallas Morning News did a story on several nonprofits related to police and fire, and we looked like we did pretty well amongst the group. So I feel pretty strongly the way, you know, our mission is nobody gets paid. Everybody's a volunteer, including our attorneys and CPA. So we try to keep as much money going to the families as possible.
And you're a solid 501c3 nonprofit organization.
We are, sir.
You guys have been doing this for a long, long time.
Yes, sir.
So you got some stuff scheduled coming up, hopefully in a couple of months after things quiet down a little bit?
Actually, yes, sir, we do. Our hockey tournament that we normally put on in April was going to grow to maybe as close to as 42 teams. The Dallas Stars have come on board in a big way and said that we are going to now be their largest adult tournament of the year. Unfortunately, we had to postpone it. We're going to reconvene in October. We're going to be opening applications for the teams. I know before the pandemic took, we had Vancouver Fire Department that was going to be traveling. We've had New York PD, New York Fire, San Francisco, San Diego PDs. They've come out in the past. We've had St. Louis Fire Department show up. It's a real nice time. We have a non-public safety and a public safety division. And believe it or not, we'll have about 14 police and fire teams that show up from around the country. So a lot of hockey here in Texas.
Is that how you guys get together from different parts of the country for events, or do you ever have a gathering like a convention or anything?
Several years ago, I competed in the Police Olympics and actually was able to go to the International Police Games in the 80s. The police and fire departments do have their own style of Olympics, from darts to weightlifting to horseback riding.
Wow.
So that is one way for creating camaraderie. What I enjoy about doing it here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area is a lot of these cities, Frisco, even Plano for that matter, you know, 50 years ago, they didn't exist. They were cornfield and the cotton gin.
Yeah, when my wife and I first came to town up in Plano, it was just a field. And now you drive around, it's not only fully developed, but they've got every kind of retail for miles around. I mean, it's crazy how fast it's grown.
It absolutely is. My wife was a Plano firefighter paramedic, and actually she was the first female paramedic in their history. When she first got assigned to Station 5, which is such a busy area, Preston and Park, you could see the fire station several blocks before you got to it. A year later, I drove right past it because it was so well developed, I couldn't remember where it was. What we do on the events is we get together and actually, you know, recognize and honor the fallen. But what I enjoy watching is how some of these new cities actually have a chance to visit with Fort Worth, Dallas PD. You know, unless you're on a fire department, has a mutual aid pact, so each city connected to another city, they'll respond as part of their responsibility. So a fire station in Highland Park could actually go and assist Dallas if need be because of their close proximity to the city.
Right.
So that occurs on the fire department side. The police department, unless it's a major issue, you usually don't see, because of the fact that we're carrying guns, there's a lot of legalities behind it. But so it's nice to be able to have an event where police and firemen from all areas, young and old, get a chance to kind of get together. And that really happens at the boxing tournament with, you know, some close to 5,000 spectators every year. So I've enjoyed watching that. And you see the retirees come, and it just kind of makes you feel good to see the guys get together once a year.
Where do you go to see the boxing event?
The boxing event, sir, is always held at the Allen Event Center until we outgrow that, and we're getting close.
Well, that's good.
Yes, sir.
Do some of your boxers take on boxers from other areas?
The thing that I always want to stress to the guys is be careful. If you get too good, nobody's going to want to box you.
Oh.
So there's been traveling teams over the years. New York City, Houston have had teams that have traveled around the country and, mm-hmm. and boxed in other departments, but then they become kind of professional amateurs. Well, I just want the guys that are not quite sitting on the couch, you know, they still got one more ounce of testosterone left in them, and they're wanting to put it in the ring for the name of somebody they lost.
So we're not just looking for the next Jack Dempsey. What we're looking for is the next Guns N' Roses champ.
Yes. So we are, we've had some really good fighters. Actually, one of the guys from Plano Fire Department used to box for me. I've always said I thought he could make the Olympics if he would have ever stayed with it.
Mm-hmm.
So he's been challenged a couple times with some guys from Fort Worth and all, but by and far, these are guys that maybe boxed as an amateur, but most likely never did.
Dave, tell us a story, if you don't mind, about maybe a family that you've helped out and how it worked out later.
From the fallen officers, you mean?
Yes.
Okay. We've had several in situations. One comes to mind. It was a recent ATF officer that actually had perished on a training mission, and he had died of a heart attack, unable to save him. We had gone to the house. Actually, some of the people that were part of the ATF are actually married to people that worked at a local radio station. So they immediately knew about us and reached out to us. So we responded early, was able to give a check to the family. Probably 2 months later, and this was during the first anniversary of the Dallas 5 fatality, we were at a gathering with the Dallas Police Department, and the lady, which was actually the sister-in-law who knew of me, came up to me and said, "I just can't tell you how much we appreciate that check that you gave my sister. We did not realize that upon the death of my brother, that there was all the funds were in joint and were locked down, and there was no money coming in. So the money that you gave us, she said, you told us you're going to need this somewhere, so don't spend it immediately." She said, "I can't tell you how much that meant to us, because that really was what we were using to just stay ahead." So that makes you feel good to know that, you know, because a lot of times if you cash a check from something, that means it's final, so to speak. I've talked to widows that have actually said they put the checks in the drawer because they don't want to cash for fear that if they do, that means that they really accepted their husband or spouse's death. So that's very trying to hear that. So it's good to know that on occasion the check is really needed, because, you know, a lot of these people, they're going to have, you know, there's not a lot of people originally from Dallas anymore, obviously. So they're going to experience, you know, people coming in from out of town. Obviously, you can't put all the relatives up in the house. So hotels are needed. Food's obviously needed. So it makes the heart good to know that the monies that we utilize through the efforts of the sporting events is there to help those families. So that's just one of many stories. We've heard, you know, several stories about, you know, one lady that her husband was killed in a car accident en route to work. She cleaned houses for a living, and she had a daughter in college and a son in high school. And so you could just imagine how devastating that was, and they had just built a brand new home. So it was going to be something she knew she would possibly lose it all. So it was nice to know that. And then several years later, she came to us and said, "Look, I appreciate all that you did. We're in a good place now, and I would like to donate money back to the foundation." So that was a very, very nice gesture on her half, on her behalf. And it was just, it's nice to know you have people out there that feel that way about you.
And, you know, when you give to Guns and Hoses, the great thing about it is your donation immediately impacts the family.
Yes, sir. Absolutely, it does. It immediately. It's a check written out to the spouse in their name, and that's there for them to use in whatever. There's no strings attached. It's whatever they need it for and for how long they can use it. For the Grand Prairie officer, the fatality of the Grand Prairie officer, Castaneda, the money went directly to the grandfather, because he had a son that was autistic, and he was able to utilize that money to seek out the therapy needed for the grandson.
So many different needs.
Yes, sir. From college to just, you know, I mean, we all have experienced the loss of somebody in our family. That's obvious. We all understand that. And this is just a little different in that it's on television and everybody gets to see it. And that's what really kind of drags us into it, knowing that, you know, we see that this person has established themselves as a public servant, and we felt that, you know, the extreme desire to, you know, help further. Because I was involved in the Honor Guard back in the 80s when we lost our first officer, and it just does the heart well to know that we're able to put a little bit of money in somebody's coffer to try to help them when and if that need arises.
Takes a lot of courage to be a firefighter or policeman or woman.
Wow. Ever more now than before.
Yeah.
I got to wonder just on the, you know, I actually have had several firefighters reach out to me and say, you know, I never thought we'd be praying as much for you guys and your job as we have here lately. I mean, there's a very healthy rivalry between police and fire, as we all know. But they're standing, you know, shoulder to shoulder with us on this scenario, and hopefully we can get through this. And, but yeah, recruiting for police departments nowadays, I don't know where they're going to go and how this is going to work.
Well, those who are courageous enough to get out there and do their job in spite of all the dangers. Wow, I can't imagine a better feeling than helping out a family that's lost somebody that's been that brave.
Yeah, absolutely it does, because, you know, the very first officer that we lost in 1989, and kind of how this kind of got itself started, we lost our first officer in 89, and his wife and him had just married some 3 short years prior. And she was an employee of the city, worked in our city municipal courts. So we saw her every day. And she became like our team mom. She adopted all of us. You know, she'd look at your uniform and straighten your badge or your, you know, and over time you begin to see how she, you know, she'd lost the love of her life, but how she began to withdraw from the things. And, you know, they never ever put them away. They never put that away. You know, the pictures are going to stay on the shelf. So it really saddens you to see somebody that really, really had so much desire to have a long life with that individual to be taken so early.
Dave, getting back to the boxing once again, something tells me, I don't know why, but you have a boxing background. Am I guessing right?
Yeah, I fought in the 70s. My dad was an all-Army champion. My brother and I both boxed the Golden Glove. So there was a desire to do this. Unfortunately, the direction I chose to take was the police department and not boxing as a profession. And as luck would have it, I had just enough of knowing what it was about and how to do it to start the boxing gym here in the mid-90s. And, you know, God never tells you where you're going to go. You just have to walk the walk with it.
That's great. I'm glad you guys got some funding for the boxing gym. It's reopened now?
It is reopened. It's remodeled.
Right.
The city of Garland was extremely gracious and kind and put a good portion of money towards it. It's a 60-some-year-old Safeway store that had not been occupied for several years prior to us taking it over. And there was a city council member back years ago that knew the building was coming available, and that's how we ended up in it some 25 years. So it's been a struggle to keep it running. This, you know, it was electrical systems that didn't work and, you know, plumbing issues and things of that nature. So with the money that the city gave us back in early 2020, we were able to do pretty much everything. And with the help of my coaches, we put this thing back on the map. I'd say it's second to none in the country. You'd have to probably go to Colorado Springs to see what you see in our gym now. So we're very pleased and proud to have it. You know, being the 4th largest boxing gym in the country, we can now say we're also one of the prettiest ones.
That's great. Well, that's terrific. Let's wrap things up here. Give me, once again, the website information, any phone numbers or any contact information you might have.
Yes, sir. So, you know, you can get a hold of us on a personal level in through the Guns and Hoses. It's on the contact page. All you got to do is just click on the name, and it'll come directly to one of us, and we'll respond via email. Or you can go to gunsandhosesnorthtx.org, or you can friend us on our Facebook page at Guns and Hoses TX, and we'd be more than happy to reach back to you. You can donate or you can volunteer. Obviously, the events are very limited this year, but in the future, we should have, you know, a restart of all of our events again. We'd love to have the people come out and help us out.
You guys are on a road trip this weekend. I think that we ought to mention why you're doing that. That's kind of fun, and where you're going.
Okay, sure. So because of the time and effort that my coaches for the boxing gym spent remodeling the gym, I gave them an opportunity to go anywhere they'd like to go, and we'd provide the funding for it. And believe it or not, they decided they all wanted to go to whitewater rafting in Colorado. So I'm driving these characters to the airport as we speak, and I'm going to put them on some 4.5s in the Arkansas River. We're about to see how well they can handle it.
4.5s, what does that mean? Oh, is that the roughness of the...
Yeah, the level of whitewater. So we're doing a half a day for practice, and then we're going to do a whole day the next day, and we're going to stay in some cabins remotely and do the social distancing, except for when somebody falls in the river, then there's a lot of distance.
Yeah. Well, be careful out there. Have fun, though.
Okay, sir, and I appreciate so very much for all the people that are listening out there, supporting us over the years. We thank you very much, and you also.
Absolutely. Dave Swavey, Guns and Hoses Foundation of North Texas. Keep up the good work, and tell those dudes to play it safe out there in the white waters. Thanks for being on with us on Better Living.
Thank you very much, and you also.
Right there on the web, if you want to get more information, gunsandhoses.org. And continuing, our next guest this morning, Paige Flink, the CEO of The Family Place. They empower victims of family violence by providing safe housing, counseling, and skills that create independence while building community engagement and advocating for social change to stop family violence. Good morning, Paige.
How are you today?
Not bad, really, considering I have avoided COVID-19. So far, so good. How about you?
Good for you. I'm good. Yeah, you know, back at the office working, and I've avoided it also. Know a few people who haven't avoided it, but it's all good.
You know, I always look at it like this. You know, I'm wearing different hats these days. You know, not just doing the radio show on K-Love, but doing some interviews. And, hey, I'm working. I got a job. Yeah. I'm grateful. Thank you. So it's exactly. Great to be talking to you. Now, you're the CEO of The Family Place. Tell me all about The Family Place.
So the mission of The Family Place for the past 40 years has been to stop domestic violence in our community. And we were created by a bunch of women sitting around a kitchen table who realized that there was no place for a battered woman and her children to go. And since that time in 1978, we have grown and expanded to really try to have the whole continuum of services for people who want to end domestic violence in their lives or who want to stop being an abuser. So our mission is strong, and it's so critical right now because with COVID-19, many people are trapped in their homes with the person who's supposed to love them and instead is abusing them, and they don't have the ability to get out because, you know, for so long we've been in lockdown. So it's a critical services, and I'm happy to describe everything we do. The way you access services at The Family Place is with our 24-hour hotline. And for victims of domestic violence, sometimes that first call is really the hardest call to make because they don't know that they deserve to be helped. They don't know if they are really being abused. And so we talk to people to see what it is they need and how we can be of service. So when a woman says, or a man, because we provide services for men who are victims as well, says that I'm afraid to be in my home, I need a place to flee, we make arrangements to transport them via Uber, thanks to a lovely Uber support, to bring them into one of our three emergency shelters.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah, Uber, when they moved into, you know, announced they were going to make their big downtown office, they gave a lovely gift and have continued through even the COVID to help support transportation for people who need to flee.
What's that phone number, the hotline you mentioned?
Our hotline, the phone number for the 24-hour hotline is 214-941-1991. 214-941-1991.
And if you didn't have a pen handy to write that down, just look up The Family Place on the web for all the info.
Website, yes, is familyplace.org is our website, yes. And there's also great information on that website. So when someone comes into the, calls the hotline, and then we send them to transportation to get to us if they don't have, or we give directions to them to a safe location, then we make sure they're not being followed, and then we bring them on in. The first thing that we do for a family is to get them settled and to see, you know, what kind of trauma they've experienced. Some people are brought to us by the police. Sometimes it's been that bad that they've had to be quickly swiftly gotten out of the home, especially if the offender has not been arrested. But they come into our shelter, and then we have everything they need, whether it's food, clothing, of course, a place to sleep. And then we start working on, after a few days and life has calmed down a little bit, we work on what do they want to do? How can they escape? And what, you know, do they need a protective order? Do they need to get job skills? Do they need a new place to live? You know, whatever it might be, whatever the hurdles are, legal services, a divorce, child custody arrangements. I mean, all those things are provided when you come into our emergency shelter. And we have, as I said, three of them. One of our shelters actually has a place, a kennel, so that people who flee and need to bring their family pet, their cat or their dog with them, they can do that.
Oh.
And, you know, it's really important because the family pet is another, that's a member of the family.
Sure.
So, you know, especially for single women, that's their child, or for kids, they don't want to leave their puppy behind. And also the abuser is often threatened to kill the animal if they were to flee. So we have a kennel. We also, in our emergency shelter, have clinics, and so you can get medical services as well. So we have a nurse, and that's how we're screening for COVID right now, is when we don't screen you out because of symptoms. You come no matter what, and then if you are, we take your temperature when you walk in the door, and if you have a fever or respiratory anything, then we put you in a room for isolation, and the nurse gets involved, and then we get COVID testing. And so far, amazingly, we've had a lot of people who are sick, but they haven't had COVID. So that emergency shelter, you can stay for 45 days, and we try to help figure out what's going to happen next.
Wow, 45 days. That's pretty generous. You can figure out a lot of stuff in that time.
If you're going to have to find a new job, or you can't go back to work because of you've lost your job because of the abuser behavior, 45 days getting set up an apartment, that'd be fast. That's fast sometimes.
I guess you're right, yeah. But it's generous of you to offer that much.
Yeah, well, you know, safety is paramount for anyone who comes to the family place. So we really, and 45 days is just the first check-in. We'll work with you if there was you know, if you were getting ready to go move, or you knew that in two more weeks you were going to get a check that would help you.
So you work
with
them. That's
good. Yeah, very flexible, very flexible.
Good.
So we have that short-term living. Also on our campus for emergency shelter, we have a child development center so that we have daycare available so that the parent can go seek a job or just sleep for 8 hours if that's what she needs to do. Anything that, because the kids can have that structure and the ability to have a person who cares for them and can help create a system of feeling better about themselves. And so we have a child development center, and we have a kindergarten through second grade school. So basically the kids who are under second grade all stay on our campus. Now, of course, with COVID, we don't know what's going to happen with school. So we might wind up homeschooling all the kids who come with us to us. So we have a child care center and a learning center. Then for people who can qualify for it, we have also extended living. So you can actually live for up to a year in apartments on our campus. So we have 25 apartments for people who might need to go back to school, or they have other really grave danger issues. Their offender wasn't arrested and the person's at large, and it's not safe at all for them to be placed in a community apartment. And so those are basically our residential services. So as I mentioned, we have two shelters for women and children, and then we also have a shelter for men. And the Family Place is the only domestic violence provider in the state of Texas that takes men and men with kids in a separate facility. And so it's amazing to see how much demand there is for the shelter for men. And so we believe no one should be hurt in their home. And so it's important that we provide services to men just as well as to women who are victimized. So
that's great.
Yeah. So those are residential services. For a person who doesn't need shelter, or who might have been in our shelter and needs to continue on a therapy, we have three counseling centers. So we have a counseling center in Collin County in the McKinney area. We have one in Central Dallas, and then we have one in Southern Dallas, south of I-30. And we've located those they're all about 20 miles to 30 miles away from each other, so that people, because transportation can be a challenge. If you know, the bus system, our transit system in Dallas County is a challenge, and so we try to be located in neighborhoods where there's a high area of demand. And so we recently opened our Southern Dallas office, and it has been amazing how fast that has. We moved from Oak Cliff farther into Southwest Dallas, and it's been amazing how fast people have come to that services there. And I just want to, in case someone's just started listening, remind everybody that anything, all services at the Family Place for Victims are free of charge. So important. And they're also confidential, so no one would ever need to know that you have been in either any of our counseling centers. So we do case management and counseling. Case management is the help you address your immediate needs, helps you if you need financial assistance, rental assistance, seeking for a job, legal services, go get a protective order. I mean, we've helped, our case managers have helped people who have COVID, getting them food, you know, it's just whatever your basic needs are, that's what our case manager helps you do and advocates for you in the community. And then we have therapists. And so the therapists are there to do individual and group. And group therapy and support groups are so valuable for a person who's been victimized in a domestic violence relationship, because so often you're isolated and you feel like I'm all by myself and no one has experienced anything like this. And then you get in a group of women and they've all, it's all the same. What they're, you know, being put down and being belittled and being cheated on and being emotionally abused, financially abused, religiously abused, sexually abused, it's all the same. And so when you get in a room full of women, like, okay, it's not just me. I'm not the crazy one. And so there's a lot of power in that. So we have support groups for women and men. And they're once a week. And you can have a counseling office appointment once a week as well. So those are our victim intervention services. And we do that for children and adults both.
So we're all stuck in a kind of a tough situation here with this COVID-19 pandemic. What is your greatest need right about now for the Family Place?
Well, at this moment, the biggest need for the Family Place is financial support.
Mm-hmm.
Because our special events, a lot of our special events are starting to, well, we don't think we're going to have our big luncheon and we aren't going to have our private dinner. And so, you know, we're really concerned about that going forward because all our events are in the fall. We thought we'd be able to ride this out, but I think we're going to be limited. You know, can't have a luncheon for 800 people. Not right now.
No.
And so there's, you know, we have a big budget and we have a big need, and we, you know, we serve thousands of people every year. So the help, and also, you know, volunteers, people can do volunteer drives. They can help us get, you know, do a clothing drive or do a sheets or towels, because when people move into apartments with our rental assistance, we try to help them start over. So whatever we can get donated for them to be able to take care of themselves is another piece of that. So when you think about the emergency shelter or counseling, those are things that happen after a violent incident has happened. So we have a prevention program because we recognize that the women who come and men who come to us, this is not the first time this has happened to them. So often that violent relationship started, the behaviors that they were adapting to started when they were teenagers. And so their first dating relationship had violence involved in it. So we have started, it's been over 20 years, we've been working with youth and teens, and we have a program called Bee Project, which is a prevention program to teach healthy relationships and healthy dating relationships, because it's so easy for that pattern to start early on, and then the abusive person feels like this is how my life is going to be, guys. I get my needs met by being abusive, and the person that's been victimized, it becomes a normal relationship. So we work to talk about respect and equality in a relationship, and, you know, especially the coercion and of pushing and, you know, not respecting people's boundaries and that sort of thing. So Bee Project has been virtual now with COVID. You know, we used to be, pre-COVID, we were in the schools. We would be doing in homerooms or in the health class or some other group in the high juniors, middle and high schools. But with COVID now, we're doing it all online. And so it's virtual learning, and we have great education and information for students, for teachers, for school administrators, as well as parents. Because, you know, parents are often, the kids are afraid to talk to their parents about a bad relationship, but the parents can be so helpful or harmful depending on, you know, what, how it goes and what's happening. So B Project is, we'll see about 5,000 kids a year in that project.
Wow. That's
yeah.
a lot. 5,000.
Yeah.
Out of 365 days. That's a lot of kids.
It is a lot of kids, you know, and I mean, we shelter 1,600 to 1,800 people a year as well and provide counseling for about 3,000. So big numbers, because this is a big problem in Dallas. And then our other program, two other programs I want to talk about. One is our Batterers Intervention and Prevention Program. So these are, majority of them, at least 85%, are men who have been ordered by the courts to come for domestic violence counseling and support group. And so we do this group once a week, and they do pay. It's a sliding fee scale, but they've committed a crime. They're on probation, and this is part of their probation accountability. And so our goal there is to teach these batterers different ways to have relationships, because a lot of their abusive behaviors are learned at home because they saw their dad beat their mom, or they lack the skills to communicate and be able to understand how to communicate your needs, or they culturally believe, they have this belief system that the woman is my property. And so those are all things that we try to address in these batterers intervention groups. And they are 24 weeks long and an hour and a half a week. And it's really important work, because if you don't help the person who's creating the violence in the home, nothing's going to change. She might flee, but he'll find a new partner.
Exactly. Then you're right back where you were again. So I think you're really smart to go ahead and come at this from every angle.
You have to. That's exactly right. And I'm really, I mean, it's not a great arrangement for a batterer to have to beat someone to get them to pay attention to them or to have sex with them or to feel loved. I mean, that isn't very successful. And so when men really, or women, really take this seriously, they can change their behavior. And it's amazing when they come back and tell us, not only is my relationship at home better, but I'm a better employee, or I'm a better boss. I mean, my coworkers see me differently because I'm not behaving the way I used to. And so they find success in it. And it's so great to see people get helped and people change. I mean, it's really wonderful. Then our final program is called Faith and Liberty's Place. And that is a supervised visitation center. I don't know if you remember back in 2001, Faith and Liberty Battaglia. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah, that was a visitation that ended tragically, right?
Yeah, the two little girls that were murdered by their dad.
Right.
It was unsupervised visitation. And so he had abused their mom, and the judges still let the children be alone with him, which is why they lost their lives. And so we started a visitation center back then, right after that happened, as a response to those little girls' deaths. We opened a center where parents who can come to visit their kids, if the judge orders them during the divorce or custody arrangements and deems that the non-custodial parent is not safe for the child to be around, then we do the supervision. And so they will come to our center and visit their child and try to build a relationship with the child. And also it keeps the two parents from seeing each other. And there's a lot of, you know, challenges of interaction there. And so it's really important, because if the parent who the kids don't live with can create a relationship with the children benefit. And also they're more likely to pay child support if they get a relationship with their kids. And so so that's really the final program we have at the Family Place that kind of closes the whole entire circle for working with people who have survived domestic violence.
Now, Paige, you started off, if I understand this right, as a volunteer. You got a pretty fascinating story of your own.
I did start as a volunteer in 1988. I've been a long time around this. Yes, I volunteered for 3 years, then I started on staff in 1991. And what moved me to even start as a volunteer was I went and visited the Family Place's first shelter, and I just couldn't believe that women would have to hide. It was not anything I'd ever experienced, and I just couldn't imagine, and it just touched my heart. I mean, I sat in the car and cried after seeing it because I just could not believe that people had to give up their whole entire everything and come and hide and bring their children. It was shocking to me. So I started out volunteering, and then I moved on and got in the fundraising department at the Family Place, and then I moved up to be development director, and then I moved up to be the queen and the cheese, the CEO.
The president.
The president. In 1997, I started that. So, you know, it's been a great opportunity for me to see, to put my, you know, communication and fundraising skills to work to help a problem in our community that's really big. I don't know if you know this, but there are over 16,000 calls every year for people who need to the Dallas Police Department, to 911 for victims of domestic violence.
Did not know that. It's a huge number.
30 a day. I mean, think, what is that, 50 a day?
Wow.
It's a huge number.
That's just an average. I mean, you might have a really bad day one day.
Yeah, and in 2019, 14 women were murdered in the city of Dallas by their intimate partner. Mm. And so of those women, nine women were African-American women. So African-American women have recently been our biggest population of victimization, and then after that it's Latina women. But it's preventable. The thing about this issue is somebody sees it. We know what's going on. It's just that we're so often reluctant. I mean, like, what would you say to somebody if you saw a man hit a woman? What would you do?
Well, I'd say something about it. That's not right. That's incredibly wrong. In fact, I'd say back off, dude. Everybody take a breath. You got to say something.
But sometimes what we see happen is people are really reluctant because, well, it's their family. It's family business.
Yeah, kind of keep it quiet, keep it under the radar. Don't want the neighbors or the rest of the family to hear about it.
You know, and not something that a lot of time people think they shouldn't intervene in.
Well, if it's really bad and they're really pushing you against a wall or something, yeah, they probably should call you guys.
Or call 911. What I would say is if you see a man hitting a woman or vice versa, call 911. But the other thing you do is honk the horn or ring the doorbell, because a lot of apartments you hear that next door, and just ringing the doorbell, even if you didn't stick around and say anything, might
kind of freak them out, and maybe they'll think someone's going to come running after them, too. Could really confuse them. Maybe they'd even head for the hills, leave the scene.
Stop. Make something stop from happening, because sometimes this rage that these people get in is they're just blindly going after it. I mean, they know what they're doing, but still sometimes you can just sort of, it might startle someone into stopping.
Right. So that's good advice.
Yeah. But also the other thing is helping the person who's being abused is another good place to start. And that's really just to say, you know, to your friend, listen, you don't come around anymore. You used to be able to come out with us and go get a beer or go get a glass of wine and feel like you're isolated, and you're always blaming your boyfriend or your husband that he won't let you. You know, it's something, I'm worried about you. And then just listen. You can't judge, because if you were to say, well, if my husband ever hit me, I'd leave him. What you've done is you've made somebody feel really bad about themselves. And that didn't go, that's not successful. So the main thing would be, especially if you know something bad is happening, is just say you don't deserve to be hurt and I care about you a lot. And if you ever want any help, I have heard of the Family Place and they do services for free and they'll come get you. You can do it over the phone. I mean, that's what we're doing now because of the COVID pandemic, is we're actually doing telephone and telehealth so that people can stay where they are and receive services. But we also are seeing people face to face if that's what they want to. But it's a challenge, and we have a pandemic, this virus. But if you think about domestic violence, it's also at a pandemic level. If you think of those thousands of people who are hurt, and it's hard for the police to know what to do. And, you know, when they go into this volatile situation, it gets very dangerous for the police. So stopping it before it gets to that point, that's what we all as a community should do our best to do.
No kidding. And I really like the different counseling programs you have for people who are both the victim and the abuser to end the whole cycle. Paige, we're just about done. You might want to get a pencil and paper and write down some phone numbers and the website information we're going to be giving you. Got a couple of questions. Now, for funding, which you need lots of, and it's been a tough year, Who are you looking for specifically to help out? Things being what they are now, you're really looking for somebody to pick up the phone and say, look, I just want to give you guys a nice donation. I believe in what you're doing. I want to help. And God bless you if you're thinking about that. What do they do if they want to get involved?
Yeah, so, I mean, our website is a great way to do it because you can do it from the comfort of your, you know, PJs sitting in the bed. Kind of just go on our website and click the Donate Now button at familyplace.org is our website. Mm-hmm. And we will happily accept your donation. We will still be selling partners cards, which is our biggest community fundraiser. That will happen in October and the fall. And that's our shopping event that you guys at your station have been always great to help us promote. And they, you buy this card for $75 from the Family Place to get you a discount at about 650 stores in Dallas, online or in person. And it's a 20% discount for 10 days that started the last Friday in October. And so that is our biggest fundraiser. We sell thousands of those cards. So, of course, we're nervous that people will want to shop. But this way you can shop online and not have to go in the stores. And so that's another way. So our website has all types of information, the wish list, you know, the things that we need that we're trying to help starter kits for our clients. We also, I forgot to mention, Jim, have a resale store.
Really? I hadn't heard about that.
And our resale store is at Forest and Marsh. And that store, we collect donations for clients, but we also have great things to sell. And so...
is the name of the store the Family Place?
The Family Place Resale Shop.
Okay.
So simple.
All right.
So simple, yeah. So that's another great way to help. It's to donate to... And we are accepting some furniture donations, but we donate used clothing too, so...
So small and large donations, cash is preferred, but there are other ways you can help as well when you check it out. That's terrific. Also, you're looking for people to join your team.
Join our team. You know, because we believe Dallas is better when the families are safe. And a safe home creates people who can go to work and study and kids can do well in school. And so having a community that pays attention and cares, I want Dallas to be the safest place for anybody. To every home a safe home is our goal.
I'm on your website right now. It says internships available, which is how you started, right, Paige?
Yeah.
A possible career, too.
Yeah, I know, and I would never have thought I would have this job.
31 years, is that right? 31.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's impressive. And with the COVID-19 situation, it really wouldn't hurt for somebody who's been blessed with some extra money that believes in the Family Place, wants to help out in North Texas against family violence, picking up the phone and saying, I would love to help fund you guys, which would be an incredible blessing, especially right about now. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. And so people, we're doing online education for people too, especially with our B project. So if people have a group of kids or they want to just sit at home with their kids, you know, who knows what's going to happen with our schools, but we have a lot of really good online education that you can also access through the Family Place website, where parents can talk to kids about cyberbullying, you know, which is a real thing and it's hard. And so, and also the types of unhealthy relationships that kids develop online and how parents can be aware of that and how to watch for it and to work with their kids if they do get into a situation where they're being bullied or they're being sexually harassed or anything like that. So those have, and so our website has the red flags. I don't know if you're in a bad relationship. Tools for parents if they want to help their kids. If they, you know, a lot of parents don't realize their kids are in a bad dating relationship, but they are.
Well, sometimes it just takes that extra hand involved in the situation to help out. We're glad you're doing it. Paige, what's the website to look for?
Familyplace.org. That's just where you can go.
And the phone number, the 24-hour crisis hotline number?
That our 24-hour crisis hotline number is 214-941-1991, 214-941-1991, and you can call anonymously. All services are free, and your safety is most important. So that's what we're here to do, is to help that nobody loses their life to domestic violence in the community.
The first step is the most important one.
It is. It is. You know, it's really hard to call because you're feeling so ashamed about it. But it's not your fault if you're a victim of domestic violence. It's the person who's being abusive to you. And that's really also very important for someone to realize that you can't make somebody hit you. They're choosing to hit you. But the first step is to say, I need help.
There's probably someone listening right now thinking, gosh, maybe I need to call the Family Place. Get in touch with them through the website or their 24-hour crisis hotline and get the confidential help you need. Paige, your story is really amazing. You started off as an intern, rose through the ranks, and now you are the president since 1997. And I understand your husband helps out a lot too, right, Paige?
Yeah, Randy, my husband, has been a great supporter. You know, I raised two boys. When I started at the Family Place, I had a three-month-old and a three-year-old, and now they're 32 and 29.
Oh, wow.
And they're men who advocate for women and men who are, you know, equality is very important in respect of everyone. And this is all they know is their mom as standing on her soapbox saying, be good to each other, love each other. So
sounds like you raised them right. Well, you're terrific. And it's been really fun talking with you, Paige.
Thank you.
If you just tuned in, it's The Family Place. They help out families who've been affected by violence, and they don't just help. They get in there and make a difference. They really do. Give them a call. And the 24-hour crisis hotline, 214-941-1991. And the website, familyplace.org. Well, thank you very much, Paige.
Great. Thank you so much.
See ya.
Bye-bye.
I'm Jim Zippo of 98.7 K-Love here at Entercom. Thanks for joining us. Be sure to tune in again next week as we focus on other organizations doing great things in our community right here on Better Living.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.